Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Bitcoin, Fiat, and Rock'n'Roll, the podcast where we explore the intersection of traditional finance, digital assets, and digital money. Crypto assets like Bitcoin, CBDCs, stablecoins, tokenized deposits. Here is where old and new finance meet from a European perspective. My name is Michael Blaschke. I'm one of your co-hosts, and as so often, I'm not doing this alone. With me is our fellow co-host, Stefan. Stefan, great to have you here.
Hi, Michael. Hi, everybody.
And today we have a guest I've been really looking forward to. Joining us from London, I assume, is Pat Patel. Pat, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Michael and Stefan. I used to be in London, but I now live in Singapore. So, yes, I straddle both countries, but I spend most of my time in Singapore.
Yeah, great cities to live in. I enjoyed living in London. Manuel, our co-host, enjoyed living in Singapore. Singapore is still on my list. Cannot wait.
Yeah, so, Pat, it's a great place.
Let me quickly tell our listeners why we are so excited to have you here, because your career touches almost every part of how modern financial infrastructure got built. So you started at VocaLink, working on the UK's Faster Payment Services, which is, I think, the world's first national real-time retail payment system back in 2008, similar to Switzerland's Twint, maybe. You then launched Money 2020 Europe in 2015, which has become a major fintech event in Europe. In 2019, you joined the Monetary Authority in Singapore, and your very first month there coincided with this pivotal moment with Facebook presenting Libra, then Diem. And while at Mars, you spun out Elevandi, which has now grown into GFTN. Today, you run the Singapore Fintech Festival, the Point Zero Forum in Zurich, and forums all over the world, and you sit on the board of Moja Loop, an open source software project aimed at more cost-effective and inclusive instant payment systems. So you've been a software builder, an event convener, a regulator, insider, and now you orchestrate public-private dialogue globally, such as at the Point Zero Forum in Zurich. Quite a combination. Pat, that's only the short version. Are you happy with that, or is there anything you would add?
So it's a lot. It feels like this is your life, or this is my life. And I don't know. When I think about it, everything is about these sliding doors moments. So I don't know if you've seen the movie. It's I think it was Gwyneth Paltrow's, one of her first movies she was in way back in the 90s. And you have those sliding doors moments where you can either take one path or another. And that has pretty much characterized a great deal of my life. And so moving on from kind of the insurance world, where is where I first started my career in the heart of London, and then moving into payments, because a good friend of mine said in 2007, he said, look, payments is where it is an interesting inflection point. And the world is moving from physical to digital. There is a lot of changes happening, and people will start to make payments with their mobile phones, and it will be very, very popular. And so that's where I kind of took the leap of faith and moved into the payment sector. And then the same with the move from VocaLink into Money 2020. I was working on a really big deal at VocaLink, and I think I spent the best part of 2 years on this deal. It didn't come through. And when it didn't come through, I decided that I had to leave. I felt a little bit emotional at the time. And so I took that leap of an opportunity that came to move, which is a strange move from being in the payment sector into an events company, which, you know, was Money 2020. Although it wasn't a normal events company, it was run by two founders that had just sold their business into Google. And it was probably one of the wildest rides in the early years. So working with two crazy founders, building out what they were doing in Las Vegas, and the plus side, I got to go to Las Vegas for like 6 years in a row, and building what they were doing in Las Vegas, taking it to Europe, taking it to Singapore, taking it to China. And then another sliding doors moment when I met Sopandu Mohanty, who is or was the chief fintech officer at the MAS. And he convinced me to leave the events world and come and join him as in the MAS. And so That was another kind of really strange move of all places where, you know, people ask me, why didn't you go to the FCA or the Bank of England? But I'm quite glad I did. I've realized a lot of things about this part of the world that I really warm to is one, the people, the culture, and the energy that we're seeing across Southeast Asia and South Asia is pretty phenomenal. So yeah, it's been a wild ride. And it's funny when you think about the things you've done, because you don't tend to look back. You're always looking forward. So when you come on podcasts like this, it's a reminder of the things that you've done. And sometimes the moments where you feel, maybe I could have done something different.
This sounds so different, these different positions in your career. Is there a common thread across all of them?
So, there's probably two things. Being on the edge of what you know. So the insurance sector at the beginning was probably a little bit less, but at Vocalink, if you think, you know, Vocalink was the company that built the first real-time clearing system. Prior to that, you had something in Japan called Zenjin, which was built in the 1970s, but it was built off a real-time gross settlement system. Whereas this was the first kind of real-time payment system for retail payments on a national level. And so that is the edge of what was going on. The same with Money 2020, because Money 2020 redefined the way the event sector worked, because, you know, but prior to Money 2020, you would have banking conferences for bankers, payments conferences for payments folks, investor conferences for investors. Was what Money 2020 did is bring all of those communities together in one place, bring a DJ in, add the fun factor back, and no one at these events wore suits. And it was the first time I went to Vegas in 2012 with the first Money 2020. And I remember taking the escalator down to the event with my suit and my tie and, you know, thought I was looking pretty good. And as soon as I got to the bottom of the escalator, I saw a sea of people in trainers and jeans and casual wear. I got back up the escalator, got changed and came back down again. And so it's kind of the edge of what was going on. And we didn't know it at the time, but it was the beginning of fintech. At the time, they thought they were building a payments conference, but in reality, they were building a fintech event. And you had people, you know, you had the founders of Coinbase, you had Vitalik there, you had all of these guys that were still scrambling around, looking to try and find deals, pitch, all sorts. The founders of Wise were there as well. And so it was quite a surreal experience, but it's the theme of being on the edge of what the industry currently knows and pushing those boundaries forward. And then the same with MAS, in the sense that MAS is probably one of the most progressive regulators. And you have a supervisory side, but you have a development side, which is unusual because normally the two are split in most marketplaces. Whereas when you have the two together, the unique access you get, and you know, you quite rightly pointed out that within the first month of being there, Libra sent a big delegation to come into MAS to share what they were doing, do an open Q&A behind closed doors, obviously. But that access where, you know, was phenomenal. And then getting the opportunity to spin out a startup from a regulator, so secure seed capital, build a team within the regulator, present it to, you know, the senior management of MAS, which was the board. And at the time, you know, you have the Deputy Prime Minister of Singapore was on that MAS board. And you had the opportunity to kind of take an idea, build this out, secure the capital, and we secured co-op funding, and then spinning out from a regulator, which isn't a well-trodden path. I can't recall many instances that a regulator has spun out an entity. And so that journey has kind of continued with Elevandi and now GFTN, because what we do at GFTN is quite unique. It's there isn't a company like us because we're not an event organizer, you know, what a lot of people think we are. But, you know, we have an events business. but we kind of see them as vehicles to deliver a set of outcomes for governments and industry. And then we have an advisory business that provides solutions for public and private sector side, from education and capacity building all the way through to policy advisory. And then we're going to have a fund in a couple of months' time with a key partner from Japan. So it's kind of a unique organization. But the point that you're making, that the common thread, it's kind of being on the edge of what I know has kind of characterized my career to date. And then also on the flip side of that, flying by the seat of my pants. I don't know if you know that phrase. It's an English phrase where you're on the edge constantly of what you are. And, you know, you can either fall one side or the other, but you're on the edge of your seat most of the time. So that's kind of the characterization and the theme that probably runs rife throughout my career to date.
So would it then be fair to say that you certainly not only build financial products, and here I'm really thinking of the payment rails, so I'm not sure if it's a startup or a scale-up, so Moja Loops. So when I prepared for the episode, really the common thread that I observed is you do not build financial products only, but really, if you will, the ecosystems that allow for financial products, either of you or of all the organizations participating in the events of GFTN and Point Zero Forum, to then scale, to ultimately scale, which is a major hurdle for the digital assets and digital money space. And would that be fair to say?
Yeah, it's along those lines. We absolutely don't build financial products or, you know, we're not a bank, we don't provide financial services, we don't have licenses in that regards. But yeah, you're right. The bit we do is we operate at the intersection of policy, finance, and tech. And so we convene these three communities. We give them the opportunity by curating the right dialogues for them to come together and resolve problem statements or align on their respective roadmaps. So whether it's a policy roadmap or a tech roadmap or a financial services roadmap, and start to align towards an element of, in some cases, growth, in other cases, to get them to speak the same language. Because as you can imagine, regulators have a different way of expressing themselves than, say, some of the tech folks and certainly the financial services folks. And at times, across different jurisdictions, they're speaking different languages. And what we do is provide that translation. We provide that translation to enable opportunities or overcome some of the industry challenges. So it's kind of, that's what we do. And then, you know, obviously we have an advisory part to our organization. So we can provide the guidance or the pathways to be able to advance a particular set of outcomes. And then in terms of some of the private sector folks, we support their growth. So we've worked with companies like Circle, Paxos, even Tether today, Ripple. We've helped them to expand beyond their current region, so predominantly the US, and help them to expand into the APAC region or parts of Africa or even into Europe as well. And we give them a bit of a soft landing. We help them engage and we support their pathways into different ecosystems, both on the public and private sector side.
That's very cool, actually. Yeah. And I only can confirm that. So when I first went to Point Zero Forum and later to Singapore FinTech Festival, that's quite a unique achievement to bring all these different stakeholders together. And you still have the DJ. Yeah? So I was very, very surprised when I first attended the Singapore FinTech Festival and it felt like something Google organized and not a regulator. So that's really unique to make regulators feel approachable for the rest of the audience, for example. I think that's quite a cool achievement that you make that dialogue happen.
I think we're quite lucky. I think we're quite lucky in that regards because we're born from the MAS and we have a lot of regulators that work at GFTM. We're able to provide that safe space and we're able to curate a dialogue that makes people feel comfortable and provide those safe spaces for an open conversation. And in some cases, quite a few of the regulators, so it's not just MAS, it's the FCA, the Banque de France, FINMA, SMB, the Bundesbank, and a whole raft of others. But quite frequently, they come to us, and essentially, when they run a roundtable, one of our programs, it's kind of like an industry consultation. So they will lead the dialogue. They will bring the public sector, a little bit of the public sector, but more the private sector, and they will have an open consultation. And if you think for years, Stefan, and you'll be aware that predominantly for many years, it would be a email that was sent around to the industry, or it was on the government website. You'd have to go into the government link and write down your thoughts on a particular piece of policy or regulatory kind of considerations. And that was such a kind of archaic way to do it. Why not have a mature conversation around a table, get a scribe, and you can keep a fluid conversation to get inputs from the industry.
Exactly. I just was last week, last Friday, we discussed in Blockchain Bundesverband, Bundesblock, about the next version of MiCA. And it's exactly that again. Yeah, you have a lot of questions in different sectors, and then many experts come together and think about how to respond to that and how to get into a dialogue, actually. And that's exactly what's happening at Point Zero Forum, which is quite an opportunity. But let me ask you one more question, because you... On these events, you see so many technologies, and you have to decide about the program. So which technologies to cover, which less to cover, and what from all your experience, what makes an innovation actually adopted and scaling over others? So we know many technologies that are just good at conferences and everybody talks about them, but they never hit the reality somehow. And we in the blockchain space, we are guilty of that too, or too early in many cases. And everybody hopes that at some point in time, the adoption might come. What do you see, Pat? Is there something common about successful technologies and less so about others?
Yeah, I think obviously the easy answer, I'm sure you get this a lot, it's timing, obviously. It's, you know, right time, right place. I think today, geopolitics is playing a role in this a little bit as well now, you know, if you think of the last kind of year or two. But I think it's capital. If there is enough capital behind it, you'll start to see some movement. And invariably, you know, we see some of these things come from the US in a big way and China, where that capital and media and movement, that tends to kind of move markets and starts to influence and shape what goes on everywhere between China and the US. So that's a part of it. But from our perspective, that's where we're a bit different in that a lot of event companies, they will speak to the smart minds that they know, and they will try and get the views of opinions of people to put onto their agenda. And sometimes you can get bias from that. Sometimes you can get people have their own personal agendas. But we have a thesis on what we're looking at. And when we think about our broader thesis, we kind of look back at the first wave of fintech. If you think the first wave of fintech was characterized by 3, 4, 5 fundamental technologies. One was the mobile phone in 2007. That was a big driver. APIs, cloud. Some would say digital public infrastructure, which came a little bit later on. So the India stacks of this world, and Singapore has SingPass and Fast. Brazil later on had Pix. But then you also have blockchain technology. And so this was the fundamental wave of that fueled fintech between 2007, 2008, all the way through to kind of probably the last few years or so. But these technologies are maturing. And so our thesis now for this next tech cycle, which I believe we're going through a really exciting time in the world today, despite all of the conflicts and all of these challenges that we're facing. But we're on a tech cycle on that next wave. And that wave is going to be dominated by clearly AI, tokenization, and quantum. Quantum is probably still some way to go to catch up with the rest. But we're seeing great movement and experimentation, largely out of universities, and ECH is doing some great things in this space, but others are as well. And we're beginning to see the private sector come in on that. But it's those three. So we will zone in on those three. And that's the tech stack that we see. And this kind of cycle will last 10, 15, maybe 20 years or so, whether it's in individual technology advancements or the interplay of technologies. And that's the bit where we see is the interplay and combinations of these technologies that we will cover at most of our programs. Having said that, you know, the programs we do in say Africa or Central Asia, we will kind of slant that a little bit differently. So in Africa, it's more kind of inclusion based, and we'll overlay a little bit around kind of stables in there because that's a really hot topic at the moment. Whereas when we look at Central Asia, we'll focus a little bit more on Islamic finance and that intersection of where technology is beginning to kind of solve some real world challenges there.
The interplay of emerging technologies that hopefully after all our conversations make it to relevant use cases. So this emergence of these technologies you alluded to, I think it was AI, it was quantum and tokenization, they might be an explanation for why architecture and compliance, yes, for the next generation of financial infrastructure is one of the two themes of Point Zero Forum 2026, because it's challenging enough to bring one emerging technology to fruition, but then their convergence and bridging them into the core banking systems or into the traditional or into the tech stack of traditional finance, that's really an architectural challenge. So one, bringing it into a historically grown tech stack, but then for multiple converging technologies, that's really an architectural challenge. And that's why I really enjoy seeing architecture as one of the two big themes here.
Yeah, no, completely agree. And it's, you know, I think what these technologies have the power to do is redefine, rewire that base, the foundation within financial services, the systems. And I think the previous wave of technologies kind of sat on top of existing infrastructure, you know, within the main. If you think mobile was a distribution channel, cloud was just enabling storage, and then APIs was just connecting random systems. Whereas if you can rewire that fundamental kind of architecture, that's where a lot of the conversations will be going. And, you know, I spent a bit of time in the US, and, you know, when you start to look at the advancements being made in the US and in China as well, it's kind of fundamentally going to change how companies operate, you know, their operating models all the way through to how you serve your customers and distribution channels. So, as I said, it's, you know, despite all of the challenges in the world, it's probably one of the most interesting times from a tech and broader financial services perspective.
I really like your global perspective here, Pat. And let's go a bit deeper down on that regarding digital assets. You touched upon the differences between Africa and APAC, for example. But if we look at Europe, Singapore, US, Gulf region, or emerging markets, when it comes to digital assets and digital money, what's the difference in these different regions? What should our listeners should look at? Because sometimes I got the feeling here in Germany that everything's working somehow with the banks and some fintechs and everything's okay and good enough. And now with Instant SEPA, we have faster payment channels. Now 15, 18 years after UK, we also have the pleasure of using faster payments on a broader scale. But what's the different discussion actually in different regions? How do you see that when it comes to digital assets?
I think this, you know, is an interesting question, and I have to keep reinforming or reevaluating my views every kind of 3 to 6 months because things are changing quite quickly. I think in the US, I think clearly the two pieces of regulation, Clarity and Genius, have changed the game for the US. And not only the US, it's changed the game for everywhere else because the conversation around stablecoins about a year and a half, a year ago, wasn't really on the mind of regulators in a positive way. And when these changes come across from the US, it's been an inevitability, a direction of travel. And so you're seeing movement being influenced because of what the US's regulation has done. We were in Africa recently, and you know, we go to Rwanda and Ghana each year. We run a program with the government. And last year, it wasn't on the agenda as such. There was a few sessions, but that was about it. This year, we managed to bring governors and deputy governors in a room with the industry to talk about stablecoins. And we went into detail on this. And the best thing is the governors and deputy governors were so curious and so interested. And, you know, the outcomes from these sessions, you know, have led to a few things. One is a series of working groups that the public and private sectors will have in Africa, in those kind of regions, the East and West. The second is looking into local stablecoins projects between the regulator and the industry. And the third one, which is quite interesting, is, you know, the wave of FASB regulation that is kind of making its way across multiple markets, the concept of adding a passporting framework into a piece of policy or regulation. And so these are the things that we're beginning to see as a result of the US. Singapore has played its cards quite close to its chest. It was one of the first to kind of come out with its regulation. And we're seeing good movement happening, but probably not as quick as, say, some of the things coming out in the US. And then obviously for Europe, you know, I feel sad sometimes about the plight of Europe. And, you know, I know you guys are kind of living and breathing this, but it just feels that Europe was the first to come out with its regulation on this, or one of the first, but it's kind of hindered innovation a little bit, and it's erred more, as we all know, on consumer protection. So not seeing as much excitement, but we're beginning to see, I suppose, a renewed vigor coming back. And, you know, you guys would have heard of, is it Qvalis? That's looking, the consortium of banks, to come in and kind of start to create a euro stablecoin and start to build out and perform connectivity to other corridors. But yeah, you still can't look any further than the US, I think, and certainly the big organizations. And, you know, with the US, it's not just the big stablecoin companies, but you look at some of the things that Stripe's doing and how they're bringing AI together, agentic AI together with their acquisition of Bridge and stablecoins. It's moving money, you know, and the velocity of money much, much quicker across complex supply chains. And that's probably one area where I think there is a lot of work to be done and a lot of problems that can be solved through effective use and of stablecoins and to a degree authentic as well. So that's kind of where we are. And it's a shame China is not really in this game by choice more than anything else. We assume, yeah, that there are other elements that they're doing, but not necessarily on crypto stables, as far as I'm aware.
Maybe to double down on the role of US, so I think they actually pressure everybody against their own standards and against their speed, which is really amazing when it comes to stablecoins. But how do you see their moves regarding tokenized securities, like all the action around public equity these days with DTCC, with NASDAQ, with NYSE joining in? Do you expect the same pressure, because it's obviously the most important capital market as well beyond the whole payments thing? So will we see the same thing for tokenized securities, just with 12-month delay in regards to the stablecoin movement? Or how do you expect that to play out?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think it's what you mentioned there, the strength of the capital markets. And I think the tentacles of the US capital markets is all-seeing and all-encompassing in multiple marketplaces. I think with what's going on in the Middle East, the capital markets in the US has just strengthened even further. And if you watch the markets today, over the last kind of 5 months since the conflict, it just feels like it's strengthened. It's just gone from strength to strength. So yeah, I think there will be a slight delay, but it will follow the same patterns for sure. It's very calculated what's been going on, regardless of whether views on the US and all of these things. It's stimulating activity, and the ripples are probably having intended but also unintended consequences as well. And it's the unintended consequences that I find quite interesting. For example, on the stablecoin side, it's the local stablecoin project that I find really interesting, because this whole movement has forced a sovereignty challenge and a sovereignty issue that is being raised in Europe for sure, and that will be covered at point zero, but certainly in Africa as well. You know, this defiance, this independence, this move away from de-dollarization, which I find the inner rebel on me really likes that.
Yeah, so I want to come back to a statement that you made on these different languages spoken among the participants of the events, but in the industry in general, right? So we have central bankers, commercial bankers, regulators, fintechs, which are often more in a startup or scale-up stage. We have the crypto-native firms. We have the technology incumbents, so the hyperscalers or the business software vendors like SAP. They do speak a different language. And I think not only on this global level, as you just explained it, which is one contribution, the international perspective on it, but also on this different languages. So, I mean, communication science teaches us that every conversation, every debate is a semantic debate in its first place. So we, in the first step, need to align on what we actually mean with our words. And we experience that in our daily lives for sure. But that's particularly true for the digital assets and digital money industry or an institutional DLT, because crypto native language is a different one than a regulator's, than a commercial banker's to some extent. And I think next to bringing the world together, so thanks to your global perspective, the different contribution is the second contribution is really at least trying to settle the semantic debates and have these actors understand. Do you have probably examples where this happened? So where a commercial a banker understood what a regulator meant, or where a regulator meant what Vitalik Buterin wants or means?
Yeah. No, it's a good one. There's the trick we find is having good moderators when you have these closed door sessions. I think it's really, really important. Somebody that can understand both sides and can ask questions in a way that brings it to life and resonates with a particular segment, but then also provides the summary in a way that can be understood by the key kind of people that are in the room. And one of the things we did at the first Point Zero, which I thought was groundbreaking, we worked with MAS and we brought together a large roundtable that consisted of one side of the room was the deputy governors and some of the payment leaders. The other side of the room were crypto exchanges and a few kind of in and around adjacent spaces. And MAS moderated this session. And they asked questions of the industry. And the regulators kept quiet. They were just listening. So they asked questions. They got their views across, opinions. Some kind of, you know, polarizing ones to kind of draw out this. And that was the first part of the roundtable. So it was about an hour. And then they had a break. And then the industry left. And then it was just MAS with the regulators. And then MAS then literally went through and had a dialogue about what they've just heard, to draw out the insights, to draw out ways to collaborate with those regulators. And I'd never seen a session like that before, where you have the voice of the industry, you had regulators. If you think in 2022, a lot of the regulators were very nervous of being in the room. They were very nervous because it was the start of the crypto winter. So they were very nervous about even talking about this. So they wouldn't have spoken in an open forum like that or in a session like that, but they were more comfortable in part two of the session to be able to share their views on what they'd just heard. So that's kind of just the genesis of Point Zero. And when you have these types of sessions, and there are multiple of these types of things throughout in the early years and even now, that you start to get a familiarity with the language, you start to get a familiarity with people. And so now, 5 years on, I guarantee that regulators will still remember the conversations they had with some of the crypto players. And there is a different vibe. And especially when you bring regulators out of their buildings into a new location like Zurich, you tend to have a different dialogue than you would do within your own office. If you see what I mean.
Before we jump back into today's episode, a quick word about an event close to our hearts, the Point Zero Forum, an annual gathering of over 2,000 policymakers, central bankers, regulators, and industry leaders at the intersection of finance, technology, and policy. BFRR is proud media partner of the Point Zero Forum, and we'll be reporting live on site with the full co-host team. Organized by the Global Finance and Technology Network and the Swiss State Secretariat of Finance, the Point Zero Forum takes place in Zurich from 23rd to 25th June 2026. This year's lineup includes Swiss Federal Councillor Karin Keller-Sutter, Teva CEO Paolo Arduino, former crypto head of policy at Andreessen Horowitz Brian Quintens, and NVIDIA's EMEA financial technology lead, Dr. Jochen Papenbrock. The agenda covers everything from AI in financial services and digital assets of stablecoins, tokenization, and the new regulatory frontier where the rules of finance are being rewritten. Come meet us in Zurich. Register at pointzeroforum.com, and as a BFRR listener, you get 30% off the full price industry pass with code BFRR2026. I repeat, BFRR2026.
Absolutely. I can only confirm that being one of those moderators at both Point Zero and Singapore FinTech Festival, I vividly remember a discussion in 2024 in Singapore. I had 90 minutes with 12 participants from Bank of England, Visa, Circle. Manuel Klein here, our co-host, was representing Deutsche Bank at the time. It was so interesting for me to guide between these different perspectives of these experts to understand what is digital money all about. So we went from retail CBDC to wholesale CBDC to tokenized deposits and stablecoins. And I was forced to create a white paper afterwards. So just 12 papers, Chatham House rules applied, et cetera, et cetera. And everybody had to somehow agree on these 12 pages. So it was not only the 90 minutes at the event, but it was the whole preparation, getting everybody comfortable beforehand to get a nice 90-minute session, trying to be entertaining, and then also to summarize up that everybody agreed upon. So I think it's a three-month process where people interact on a quite safe level, I guess, due to Chatham House rules that you are not allowed to tell who said what, but just the general flavor of what's being talked about. And that's really cool. And we will bring that to Point Zero in just 2 or 3 weeks. And we now at BFRR, we are official media partner, which leads me to the question, Pat, what should we do there? What could be our role as a podcast? You know, we usually don't go really, really live. We record live, but we have a chance to optimize a little bit. What would you recommend to us co-hosts? What could be our contribution to that dialogue?
Sure. No. I think it's all about getting that temperature check of what's going on. And so there'll be a lot of people there open to quick fireside chats or quick conversations. And so to get that insight and share it with your audience, I think would be very useful. I think you'll also find some of the regulators may be a little bit open to be able to share their views and opinions. So they may not be able to do some of the podcasts and stuff, but you can at least get a synthesis of a handful of regulators to kind of get the temperature check of what they see happening now, you know, and further down the line. I think, you know, there's going to be a number of really interesting roundtables that are worth kind of just kind of jumping into. I think the session with Tether, so Paolo from Tether, I think that will be quite a key session because he's going to be interviewed by a former regulator. So I think that's going to be quite a dynamic session. And I don't think they've ever been on a stage, or I don't think Paolo's ever been on a stage with a regulator before, or being interviewed by a regulator for sure. So that will be quite a unique one as well. Yeah, and we'll be talking actually with, you know, Tether announced Geld last week. They announced the stablecoins project with the National Bank of Georgia. And so there will be a little bit around that on stage as well. So the governor's coming from that. We'll see Tether there talking about it as well, which I think could be an interesting pathway for other countries to follow in a similar footprint, a public-private stablecoin. Essentially, all I can say for you is get involved. And it's not just during the day. In the evenings, there'll be some interesting activities, and happy to send you guys some invites as well, so you can kind of mingle in with some of the overseas crowd.
At this point in time, maybe a full disclaimer, we are an official and proud media partner at the Point Zero Forum. And Pat, believe me, will make best use of that to capture exclusive insights, unspoken words as much as possible. And your team, Pat, is doing a great job in helping us find different avenues for doing so. So our co-hosts will be in the very sessions as panelists. We learned that conversations are rich offstage, of course. We'll do our best to capture voices from all these parties we mentioned: central bankers, commercial bankers, regulators, fintechs, crypto native firms, all of them. And maybe one last question on Point Zero Forum happening in Switzerland. So with all of these different stakeholders or parties attending, where do you currently see the biggest gap in understanding between these groups?
The biggest gap. That's the thing. It's a really good question, by the way. I think
I have ideas, but I don't want to bias you.
Yeah. No, I think the gap has certainly started to close because people have an openness now, a much bigger openness. I think it's going to be around probably some of the considerations around the cross-border space. I think between regions, I think that is probably one element. And I think the gap around views around sovereignty and what that looks like for different markets, I think that's going to be a big piece, certainly, that needs some level of resolution on that, I think. But I'd be interested to hear your thoughts, Michael.
So just to understand your initial point correctly, so the concern is to what extent a financial infrastructure remains sovereign, so bound to a nation state, or really, and actually that's one of the massive opportunities of DLT, to once and for all give us a global financial infrastructure in which sending money or managing money is as easy globally, like sending emails globally or WhatsApp text message, at least in the Western realm of the internet. So is that your point, like this trade-off between national sovereign financial infrastructure or this one unified global infrastructure?
Yeah, it's the point around that. It's the ownership, I think, and just having, I think there's the fear of not being able to use a particular type of service because there is no ownership on this. But if you think about it, and that email analogy has been used quite a bit, but it all boils down to money, and it boils down to like six or seven use cases of money. It's how you spend, save, manage, borrow, share, and lend money. I think there might be one other. And we've just put legacy rules, legacy people, and legacy systems to govern how we do those things. And so breaking down some of that thinking, I think we're seeing now in spades. But, you know, do you need to own it? Can you own parts of this? Can you own the core kind of IP of it? I think there is there's a debate there that will certainly rage, not just at Point Zero, but it will rage for a little bit.
Yeah, and Pat, since you asked, so in my view, the biggest gap in understanding between these groups is actually between either a coexistence of digital of different forms of digital money, or the kind of winner takes all of one or two winning forms of digital money. So too often I still observe conversation in which then central bankers assume or hope for a North Star future of finance in which CBDCs are the central form of digital money. And then, of course, the crypto maxis or maximalists opt for a future in which Bitcoin is the predominant form of digital money. And my own view here is that we will observe a co-evolution and co-existence of digital forms of money. And it's not just on this first level, like is it going to be CBDC or stablecoin or tokenized deposit? Even if you double click on stablecoins, for example, you have parties fighting for TradFi, TradFi adjacent stablecoins. You have parties opting for or fighting for DeFi native stablecoins. So even within the stablecoin space, you have different parties, if you will, that fight for different design choices and design characteristics of stablecoins.
Yeah, no. That's spot on. And I think it feels like it's a race, you know? And everyone has a different mode of transportation, and they're all trying to get to this holy grail. But essentially, you know, our view here is that there has to be a coexistence, there has to be an interoperability, there has to be a set of principles that people can work to. So we would kind of see that as digital money principles, that whichever route you want to take, there is a level of harmonization that you can at least have a level of interoperability between these in some way, shape or form. That's something where you know, we'll be looking to convene through GFTN's kind of working group. So we're running a series of these working groups across jurisdictions to start to align on implementation pathways. So whichever you decide, so whether you're the provider or the one that's going to be using the user of these as a business, there is some level of alignment there and an implementation pathway. And I think that's really, really important.
Yeah, and I think the stablecoin thing has the problem that it's such a global movement. Yeah, and that if you accept a euro stablecoin from a US issuer, then you immediately have very interesting questions where the reserves are held. And if you send the stablecoin across borders, what's happening with these reserves? Do they also need to move behind the scenes? And all these discussions, which are very tightly related to geopolitical aspects, not just investor protection or consumer protection, but it's about influence. Yeah, who has the strongest influence? And this comes from my perspective, always from the market. And coming back to one of the topics you originally mentioned was the whole AI thing, and maybe agentic finance is another of these market drivers that I really want to touch upon and get your thoughts, Pat. You bring both topics, AI and stablecoins, in Point Zero Forum again together. How do you see them playing together? What's the impact of AI in the payments realm? Exactly, and which kinds of debates do you expect at the next conferences in that regard?
Yeah, no, for sure. And you know, we see a convergence of these technologies, and there'll be the interplay, certainly, as we mentioned before. But I think with agentic, I think, you know, when I think about some of the movements happening, like Amazon's making great ground here, but Stripe is making some really good ground. And, you know, they've got their own Link wallet now, and, you know, agents can speak to retail agents and start to conduct transactions. And that's beginning to pick up. But the debate we'll start to see in point zero is, what are the rules and governance around these interactions between agents? What does that kind of look like? And so there is a regulatory lens there, there is a consumer protection lens there is a chargeback lens in there as well. And these are the things that there is a number of roundtables and stage sessions that will start to kind of bring these things together and start to inform thinking on both sides of the fence. Because I think in a year's time, the number of transactions conducted by agents, I think, is going to, you know, increase quite a fair amount, driven by the US, but we'll see others in between doing the same. I think there is a topic to be had clearly around more broader governance. And I think more around kind of at least some level of harmonization across regions. That's the piece that Point Zero does quite well, because we're able to bring not only the European regulators and community together, you'll get a US voice, you'll get a Middle East and an Africa voice to a degree, and then you'll get the Asia voice. But that's where you can start to create cross-regional harmonization and at least a sharing of ideas and best practices. And that's the piece that I think we'll see a lot more of. Obviously, Europe came out very quickly again with their AI Act, and that's coming into play very soon, I believe. But is that the right model? Some would argue that it's a hindrance, or it's very pro-consumer protection, that it hinders the innovation. So you'll see maybe some AI companies stay, others may have no choice but to move to other jurisdictions.
Yeah, Pat, on the intersection of AI and finance or stablecoin in particular, I just came back from our global major event that is SAP Sapphire in Orlando, and I can tell you that exactly this intersection predominates the whole conversation in the business software landscape. Naturally, you heard of the SaaS-Copolypse threat to the whole industry. And I think we move from a world in which we run on deterministic business processes and software only to a world, to a target state in which deterministic software is to some extent combined by probabilistic software. That is software that rests on and builds on agentic AI or AI agents that then also make use of money. Of course, of digital money, because because digital money just lends itself to agents. But if this vision that at least many business vendors have turns out to be true, so if AI agents become really economic actors and contribute a probabilistic part to business processes, like settling a transaction or like making a payment, yeah? So economic actors that can initiate transactions, manage workflows in companies, or negotiate services even, that might be an interesting use case. So what kind of money and compliance infrastructure do these agents then need?
There would have to be rules put in place here. So the business or the consumer would have to put their set of rules, and then there would have to be a governance at a regulatory level. So that's the piece where I don't think that we're quite there yet. And how does that get embedded into the agent or the transaction, the activity that actually happens? And that's where regulated thinking now on, instead of regulating by product or by vertical or industry segment, it's regulation by activity. And if we start to think along regulation by activity, you can start to create the right type of regulation for the right type of financial transaction, because everything seems to be blurring across multiple lines now. And so does that fit in a certain box A or box B, or does there need to be kind of a grayer area where you get the surety, you get the safety, you get, you know, the assurance, I suppose, that the payment is being made, that if there is a chargeback attributable to it, or there is a cap limit, because you would want to have some level of confidence about those transactions taking place. If it's your agent with a retailer or an agent to an agent, what does that kind of look like? But I think Stripe has their Link wallet. I think it's quite impressive. Still kind of only a handful of transactions, but we'll start to see that grow quite quickly.
Yeah, what you're describing is essentially exactly the pushback of the whole software industry, in that there remains a potentially small part in driving then our North Star financial system, if you will, a tokenized economy that prevents agentic AI or AI agents from simply doing what they want. There will always be regulatory and legal boundaries, hopefully. I mean, there has to be, and it will be software that ensures that at any point in time, at least a serious companies that ensures that these agents use the form of digital money they are supposed to use it in a compliant way. That's a fascinating future, and we are building it right now.
So I think we are quite far in the podcast. We need to slowly but surely come to an end. Pat, we talked about this year, but let's look into the future. If we meet again at Point Zero Forum in 2029, what will have changed in the financial landscape?
Yeah, so I think quantum will be a big part of that dialogue. And I think there'll be a lot of discussions around the interplay of all three technologies. Clearly, AI would have advanced quite a bit, and tokenization. Hopefully, we have, you know, to Mikhail's point, we have some level of clarity around these different modes of payments. or different methods of payments and a level of interoperability that comes in there, rather than everyone going off in their own directions and creating walled gardens. So I think there'll be a level of interoperability there, a level of harmonization on how different ways of transacting can not collaborate, but at least coexist with each other. I think those three technologies, as I mentioned again, I'll say it again because I'm going to labor the point that the three will start to create more ways in which it can disrupt the underlying financial services system.
Like a flywheel.
I think, I hope so. Yeah, for sure. And I always look back at the learnings from where the world was straight after the financial crisis, and people were beginning to use the mobile phone in different ways. They started to experiment with APIs and cloud and all of these things. I think that is a good reference point. But I would hope that this next wave, so a lot of the regulators we have, you know, are very more open than they've been, say, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And it's this next wave that we're seeing coming through that are kind of mid-level and moving up to deputy governor level and governor level, even in some cases, that this wave have grown up with the technology and have been kind of close to the industry as it's been moving, that we'll start to see an even more regulatory environment that's willing to kind of have these, you know, awkward and tough conversations, or willing to upskill to be able to keep pace with what's going on. And that's the piece that I think I would like to see, and I think we'll see in, you know, in 3 to 4 years time.
Yeah, Pat, 2029 is one thing, but Point Zero Forum 2026 is approaching fast this year already. So who should come to this year's Point Zero Forum, and what mindset should these attendees bring?
For sure. I think, you know, when I think about Point Zero Forum, it's the place you go for that substance. It's the place you go to feed your soul. So if you're an intellectual, if you're a thinker, if you're a dreamer in the industry, then this is the place for you. If you like sitting in and listening to substantive conversations about the, you know, the direction of travel for X or Y, you're keen about the AI space or tokenization and stable space, or the interplay of or tech more broadly, you know, the applications of tech, then this is the place for you. It's not for the faint-hearted. It's for those that want to increase their capacity and the framing of where things can go, because we've also had companies come, or people that have come, that have learned or developed a new product based of what they've learned from a roundtable or a particular direction of travel from a regular a policymaker or a regulator. So that's kind of the people that would get the most value from Point Zero.
Very cool. One final question from my side. Is there one conversation the financial industry is usually avoiding that will be talked about at Point Zero?
I was going to say the geopolitics piece, but I think it will be talked about, but it will be talked about in those closed door settings or in late night networking sessions. I think that's probably the big piece right now. The other one is these corridors, and I haven't really talked about that, but there will be a lot of things being talked about, corridors between jurisdictions. And some of those corridors, you know, I would say kosher corridors, others probably less so for geopolitics reasons. So that's the piece I think we'll see a lot of, this cross-border economic corridors that lend itself to applications of technology.
Yeah, understandably, the hot topics in the sense of sensitivity or ones you want to avoid on a public stage are then discussed in the silent closed rooms. I really hope that exactly that will happen at Point Zero Forum, so that the financial industry will talk about the topics it has been avoiding so far, but need urgent reconciliation. So that's one of my big hopes when attending Point Zero Forum. Yeah, with that, first and foremost to our listeners, thanks for listening to Bitcoin, Fiat and Rock'n'Roll and for making it until the end of this lovely conversation. Thank you so much to you, Pat, and your team for making this interview happen and for the takes and insights you gave us today. If you all enjoy the podcast, please recommend and rate us. That really helps us the most in contributing and scaling this content, this European perspective to the world. Yeah, make sure to visit our website for more detailed analysis and detailed show notes. Make sure to subscribe to BFRR wherever you get your podcast. And by the way, engage in our conversation on in our expert communities on Telegram. They are available both in German and English. And by the way, Pat, feel free and invited to join the English-speaking Telegram channel too for the great discussions we have them. Yeah, join us next week when we'll be exploring another critical development in the evolution of digital finance. Until then, this is Bitcoin, Fiat and Rock'n'Roll, bringing Europe's perspective on institutional DLT to the world. Thank you so much, Pat and Stefan. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Fantastic. Thank you.
The views expressed are solely the personal opinions of the hosts and are provided for informational purposes only. This podcast does not offer financial or investment advice. Always conduct your own research and make well-informed decisions before investing. Please be aware that the hosts and guests may hold cryptocurrencies or digital assets discussed in this episode.